Hey, toy family, you are listening to the Marsham Toy Hour, where we discuss anything and everything designer toys. I'm your host, Gary Ham, and I'm being joined by my co-host,
Tyler Ham.
And this is Aaron from Martian Toys.
Hey, this is finally episode 6.
I know, it's been a good couple of months here. We have some kind of exciting news. The podcast is actually done, I think. I would honestly say it's exceeded all of our expectations so far. Our first 5 episodes have about 1,200 downloads total, which is fantastic. We are now available streaming on iTunes and Stitcher. The best way to get a hold of those is just to search the word Marsham. And if you want to just stream it directly from our feed, it's marshamtoyhour.podbean.com. And one more thing that's really important about this is if you do enjoy the show, please, please leave a positive iTunes review. The more positive reviews we get, the more iTunes pushes our show and it allows us to reach out to a larger audience. So if you like us, just please leave a note and say so.
Yeah, definitely. And I also want to point out, if this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. This podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, so come back often. And if you have any questions, any topics you want us to cover, or any game suggestions for us, please email us at marshamshow@gmail.com.
So actually, on the Podbean, our Podbean site too allows comments, so if you have a comment about anything, please just send it there. We check it and we'll be sure to get back to you, or we'll just actually might even just read your comment here on these podcast airwaves.
Definitely. Well, I'm excited with how everything's been going. So it sounds like we're getting really good feedback from everybody. Seems mostly positive. So it seems like we're on the right track.
Yeah, so far everything I've heard back has been good. I'm looking forward to hearing more. But yeah, I mean, it's all so far so good. It's been enjoyable. It's been a great experience so far.
Yeah. All right, well, let's just go ahead and get on with the show. So this is episode 6. Today, we are mostly going to be talking ToyCon UK. Aaron recently took a trip over there exhibiting, and he's going to fill us in on his experience. But first, let's go ahead and do our Leaks and Sneak Peeks for this episode. Leaks and Sneak Peeks is our segment where we discuss about things we might have seen on social media or one of the toy websites. And we just kind of discuss what we might be excited about or just, you know, what we want to help promote. Aaron, why don't you go first?
Well, let's see. I was at ToyCon, so I'm maybe not as up to date as you guys are for this last week, but I saw the news about the Andy Warhol Foundation licensed dunnies that are coming out. I guess they're making blind box set, and then they're also making 20-inch versions, like only 5 of each. And I understand there's been a little bit of a controversy over that and the price on that. You know, I was out of the country, but I've been hearing little whispers about that, and I'm going to reach out to a couple of the artists who got into a debate with Kosick about that and see what that's all about maybe for next week.
Well, you want to fill us in on what the debate was?
I think a lot of people are just like, hey, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but I think it started off like, you know, how is this relevant? You know, why aren't you, you know, doing more stuff with new artists? And, you know, Andy Warhol's an artist, you know, 30, 40 years ago and selling $2,000 20-inch dunnies, like, how is that really, you know, who's that helping exactly? And, I mean, I don't know you know, like I said, I need to get all the scoop on that, but I understand there was quite a bit of online back and forth on that. So I'll put that aside for now. Okay. The other thing I guess I saw this week was the new Luke Chu Headspace, the black version. That was pretty cool. And I'm trying to think if I saw anything else that really caught my eye.
Actually, while you take a pause, it's kind of funny that you mentioned the dunnies, because it's funny that you had such a strong reaction one way to them, because I probably feel like I was more leaning towards the why are they doing this side. Like I don't feel like it's necessarily the most inspired thing Kid Robot's done. I feel like it's, yeah, it's Andy Warhol, but it's everything we've already seen of Andy Warhol a lot of times. I mean, all the themes they chose are very much repetitive Warhol themes. And I mean, if you're gonna do a series of a classic artist, you know, I kind of think maybe stray away a little bit from the stuff we've seen. You know, like everyone knows about the soup can. Everyone knows about the Marilyn. Mm-hmm. You know, let's do something different. And it feels like it's new and stale at the same time. I don't know. So it's kind of interesting that we both had entirely different reactions to that. I'm kind of curious, like,
that's my reaction too. I don't want to say that.
You're not into it.
No, I can appreciate Andy Warhol, the artist, but I'm having trouble. Like, I'm wondering if part of it's because I'm jet lagged and I was overseas and I was doing other things. But like when I saw it, I didn't quite grasp the relevance of it. It didn't. I don't understand. In fact, I thought, well, my first impression when I read the article was, did AWF, Andy Warhol Foundation, did they reach out to Kid Robot, or did Kid Robot reach out to them? And since then, I found out that this is a typical Kid Robot production. In other words, they approached Andy Warhol Foundation and asked for the license and have paid quite a bit in royalties to produce these, and which to me makes even less sense than if Andy Warhol Foundation said, hey, you know, we're interested in you, you know, collaborating with us, and we're going to sell these at MoMA and various museums around the country, then that would make more sense to me. But if they're going to rely heavily on, you know, Rotofugi and My Plastic Heart and Toy Art Gallery and 3D Retro and Woot Bear to sell these, it seems that we're going down that same path with some of the other Kid Robot releases this year, where not that they're terrible, it's just that could there be something more relevant they could have released instead?
Yeah, like what got kicked off the queue so they could do this?
Yeah. So I think we're on the same page on that one.
It does nothing for me, and when I see it, now I'm thinking, what's the next one going to be? Is Keith Haring going to be next? I'm kind of with you guys. It's meh to me.
I mean, if you're going to go after an artist to do, you know, a classic artist, I would think, you know, an Edward Gorey Dunny series would be awesome, you know, or... I don't know. Even an M.C. Escher one would be a little more inspired, I think, than Andy Warhol. I respect Andy Warhol as an artist. Don't get me wrong, but I've just the works they chose are. You know, you can go into any poster shop, any, you know, Pottery Barn in the United States, and find that Marilyn in that soup can. You know, it's kind of a lot of the same things we've already seen, and that's really my main problem with it.
Right.
Yeah, like Gorey, Escher, those are great suggestions. Maybe Dr. Seuss. I mean, you see very few
Dr. Seuss. That
would be amazing. Yeah, that I would be on board. Mm-hmm.
The other thing I saw this week was the Panda King 3 by Angry Wobots. I missed out on the previous versions of that. I don't think he didn't like reinvent the wheel, but I would love to get my hands on that personally. That looks really cool.
Nice. Definitely. Those are all good things to point out. So how about you, Tyler?
Actually, in the spirit of London Toy Con, and this is actually probably not the timeliest of releases, but it was John Paul Kaiser's custom RJ McCready figure, which was a Toy Con exclusive. And I love The Thing. All right. The Thing is one of my favorite sci-fi movies. And it's interesting that I don't really see a lot of customizers or even licensed toys tackle it. And so, I mean, in my opinion, and this is probably the opinion of a lot of people, you know, I would say if you take the top three sci-fi movies of the at least early 80s, you probably have most people would say Empire Strikes Back, Aliens, and The Thing. And yet you see a lot of, Empire Strikes Back is a given. You see a lot of work, Star Wars and Empire related.
No, never.
And you see a lot of, never seen anything in Carpenter before. And you see a lot of alien stuff, you know, like Super 7 has the really cool little Sofubi aliens. Funko took on Alien, but you rarely see anything related to The Thing. And so just that someone took on that property itself is a instant, you know, A+ for me. Okay. I love it. So my first ever custom show I was invited to, I did a The Thing based piece. Okay. So okay. Hopefully we get to see more. You know, I would love to see a Funko reaction take on it too.
Yeah, right. I've never even actually thought about that perspective of it before. But you're right. I can't remember seeing anything prior to that.
Pardon the pun.
Funko's done two Kurt Russell 80s figures already. You know, let's just do one more.
Sure.
Yeah. It was a really nice resin too. I saw the McCready's in you know, obviously at ToyCon, and I think there's a couple left. If anyone out there is still interested. I don't know if they will be by the time this airs, but they might be. There's a few left. So check John Paul Kaiser, BigCartel.com still.
His work is always good. I mean, even if you aren't into The Thing, I mean, his work across the board is generally what I would call fantastic.
Concur. So,
yeah, he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. How about you, Gary? Do you have anything that you've gotten your eyes on this week?
Yeah, there's a few things. I'm kind of scattered this week, actually. But yeah, there actually was a post, well, two posts that I was bummed to see on social network this week. The first actually came from Huck G, and it actually has nothing to do with Huck at all. But he did post this really cool vinyl monkey on Instagram this week. And when I saw it, I just really liked the design. But then I read the post, and it also mentioned that the figure was casted entirely out of that pink eraser material. And I thought that was really cool as well. So I did some research, and I actually found out a little bit more about the figure. And it turns out that apparently for the past couple of years, there was this really cool vinyl monkey toy that was put out by the email marketing company MailChimp. Anyways, their brand mascot is a chimp that they call MailChimp Freddy. Now, this figure's really cool design, and it's 4.5 inches tall. And doing some research, I learned that Super 7 actually helped design the toy, which explains why I like it a lot. But one of the other coolest things about this toy was that it was completely free through some fun campaign branding MailChimp did. So there was 10 colorways released in total, and their last one was the one that Huck G posted, which is an all-pink Freddy casted in eraser material. Super cool. But after looking at all the colorways, even though the eraser one's really cool, I think there's this Yeti colorway. That is my favorite of them all. But again, these giveaways are all done with. We can't get them anymore. But you can find plenty of them on eBay for much less than what we pay for a typical vinyl figure. And again, I'm disappointed that I didn't know about it sooner. But I'll probably end up picking up one on eBay. And then another thing I saw actually today was there's going to be a new colorway of the Mondo's Iron Giant figure. It's kind of like a Coming Out of the Shadows version colorway. And I was actually disappointed to see that. I know in the toy industry, there's always a lot of colorways for things, but considering people literally just waited a year to receive theirs, and still this week and even last week, friends and people on the social sites have been showing photos of theirs, and all of a sudden, bam, you just waited a year, and here's another colorway at $300. So I get it. It's colorways, it's something that has to be done, but I was disappointed to see maybe just the timing release of it. I hope it's not another pre-order deal. Actually, it goes on sale on Monday, April 18th. I'm sure it's going to go really fast. I don't know. I just felt bummed when I saw it. I just thought kind of greedy for some reason.
It turned me off too.
Yeah.
I don't either. I feel like if, you know, when you are a company like Mondo, I mean, Mondo isn't a designer toy company. And so you don't go into Mondo expecting colorways, especially because, I mean, they don't do it with their posters. They don't have a poster sell out and then they go, oh, well, this is the gold version. I mean, sometimes they release alternate colors, but they do it at the same time. And I don't know. It just seems if you thought it was going to be that hot of a seller, you should have maybe taken the risk and doubled the original production run, you know, instead of kind of getting people excited about it and creating this scarcity for all these people that waited all this time that kind of probably feel, you know, and rightfully so, feel like they have something kind of special. I mean, it was rare. It's very cool. Right. You know, you kind of show that and people go, wow, you know, that's a really cool piece. And then to kind of come out after the fact, to me, it feels like they're kind of like, well, this sold well, so why not just make a black version?
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like, well, you can do glow in the dark one next if that one sells out, or you can do, you know, maybe chrome plated. It makes me not want to buy that stuff then. It just puts a bad taste in my mouth because I feel like, you know, like I said, I've said this before, I kind of collect not with investment in mind, but with at least some sort of return in mind.
Right.
And it kind of turns me off from future things like that because, you know, the more you keep releasing, you know, the kind of the more stale the original value gets, or they might release a cooler one. I mean, if they actually came out with like a plated one, that would make the original not look as good. I don't know.
That's kind of what bumps me out about. The original, I think, is definitely better. I think most of the Iron Giant fans are very happy with the one that they have. But, you know, for this one to come out, it just, I don't know. It's if I was purchased one, I think it would be kind of a punch in the gut knowing that I just spent $300, waited a year, and then, oh, here's another cool version. Do I spend another $100 to get that version as well?
$300. You
know, especially for a completist.
Is it the price point? Like, I mean, if Funko does it with a pop, like if sometimes they'll release the same pop like in just slightly different colorways. Like,
I think maybe partially it is the price point. I don't know why this colorway bummed me out when I saw it. One, I just don't think it's needed. It just seemed like an extra grab to get extra money. And I think Mondo's better than that. I don't know.
Yeah, I do too. And it's the same. I mean, when Funko does it, you also kind of have to take in mind Funko deals in the thousands of figures. So if they release 5,000 of something and it sells out and then they do 2,000 more, it's still a fairly wide release. I feel like if you do a couple hundred of something and then kind of decide to do more, it's kind of a slap in the face to the people that actually bought the couple hundred. Because, I mean, Mondo stuff sells out fast. I mean, those are people who get up in the morning, get right online, and yeah, it's the same thing you were saying, just refresh, 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 and hope you get one. Mm-hmm. Kind of makes me feel like, you know, if Mondo really was behind this, they could have just done the initial run, done a higher number.
Right. I wonder if this colorway was available a year ago when everyone was making the purchases. You know, that would have been fine. I think you could have had, then you could have made your choice, go for this one or both, or I don't know. It surprises me that it kind of bums me out because, you know, multiple colorways is, you know, a huge part of the designer toy scene. And
Mondo's not a designer toy company, though. I mean, they're a company that does, you know, they do limited posters, they do limited editions.
True.
And this is kind of, you know, I hope this isn't a new model where all the limited editions suddenly become opened editions and just a little different.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're definitely on the fringe, you know, as far as, you know, they're getting the coverage on the designer toy blogs and everything. So I'm going to assume they're going to start following the model and to get more, you know, to get extra money, go ahead and make it.
But I mean, they don't need to. I mean, if they had doubled their initial run, they would have sold out of those too. I mean, have you ever actually tried to get a Mondo poster on the day of release?
No, but I hear it's
insane. I mean, it's next to impossible. I mean, because they do, I don't know if they still do this. I mean, I literally gave up. But they used to say, you know, follow us on Twitter and we'll let you know when the posters go on presale. And so you're not only refreshing Twitter all day, then you have to run over to Mondo and refresh Mondo. I mean, it's like the hottest concert ticket ever.
No, and you're competing
against...
It's
like the second it's available, yeah, it's gone.
And you're competing against people that have these coding and scripts that are doing everything for them. So it's tricky. I've heard of collectors having really good benefits to getting these F5 scenarios over other people because they have some sort of program or script or app that's giving them an advantage. And I don't want to compete against that.
Well, you know what? That sounds terrible, but I also wish I'd had that when I wanted some of these posters.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you know, it was like something that I really wanted, I guess I would take, you know, the benefit of that. But from what I've heard, it sounds like the majority of the Mondo fan base has that working for them. So,
well, Mondo's work is awesome. I mean, not to get off on a Mondo tangent, but I've enjoyed everything they've done. I mean, their toys have been great. Mm-hmm. Their posters are great. They do cool limited edition sort of non-poster toy things that are all great.
Yep.
I don't even like this colorway. Like, I don't get it. It's not like it really even makes sense. It's like in any figure, if you paint it black, could technically be like that figure at night or in shadow.
Right.
You know, it's not like they did a battle damaged one or something like that. It's just Iron Giant.
But it is cool.
Daytime,
I mean, you look at like a lot of the movie posters and stuff, which Mondo's, you know, pretty much almost famous for is their renditions of movie posters. That shadow version is very prominent in, you know, several of the theatrical movie posters. So I can see why they would have done that colorway. So I guess it does make sense in some regard. Well, let's just go ahead and let's move on. And Aaron, so you went to ToyCon UK. Let's hear how that was for you.
Oh, it was such a blast. I mean, if it, you know, anyone out there, whether you're a collector or artist or another store, you know, if there's a way you can make it work financially to go, like combine it with a vacation or run a raffle, whatever you have to do to get there, I highly recommend it. It's a much more intimate gathering than even DesignerCon. You know, there was approximately 40 stalls, and it was like the quality level was great. You know, familiar faces and you know, some artists I'd never heard of. I mean, I didn't get out of the Martian Toys booth until probably 2 p.m, and thing was over at 5. So a lot of things had been picked over. For instance, like Two Petals Rose, I heard he sold out in the first 15 minutes.
It's a one-day event, right?
It's a one-day event. You have setup is from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday, and then you have 3 hours on Saturday morning. And, you know, people rush the door at 10 a.m., and, you know, they're hungry. UK, Europe, they're hungry for – they don't have a lot of events like this. This is really the big show of the year. So when they come, they're not just coming to socialize. They're, you know, they're on a mission. So, you know people – I mean, the first 2 hours, I've never seen anything like it. It was you know, you had your hardcore collectors there who they brought their cash and they had their things that they wanted, and they made a beeline to the booths, the stalls that they needed to, and got the pieces they needed, and you know, then things kind of quieted down later in the day, but it was still a good crowd all day long, and it was a really good vibe. You know, everyone's very down to earth and easygoing, and very open to talk, and I really enjoyed it. Huck was there as well. He had a stall across from Martian Toys, so we represented the States.
Americans.
Yeah, I hope we did an okay job. You know, Huck brought his blank, and he had several different colorways, and yeah, it was a really good mix of people.
I mean, it sounds a lot like DesignerCon that you're describing, actually. I mean, how does it compare to your experience?
It's about 10% the size, or
right,
maybe 15% the size of DesignerCon. It's a lot smaller venue, a lot less stalls or booths. They call them stalls, we call them booths. You know, I mean, hey, you know, every year there can be different trends. There can be, you know, there can be illnesses, there can be, you know, different things can happen. So it might not be fair to compare November's DesignerCon to this event. But for myself, or for Martian Toys personally, it was a more rewarding event this one year.
How many London Toy Cons have there been? Do you know?
This is the fourth.
It's still a fairly new show.
And how many out of the country artists are showing up for the event to exhibit at the event? So you said it was you and Huck, and I think Brotherford was there. How many other people came from out of country?
So in our booth, we had Javier Jimenez and his other half, Christina Ravina. They were guests in the Martian Toys booth. I should mention, you know, RX-7, he won the Dunny contest they held, and so he was there as well in the booth. But outside of the Martian Toys stall, Flaw Toys, which is Sander, he's from the Netherlands. There was another booth, I think her name is, I don't even want to mispronounce it. It's Magweno or A. I have to go look her name up later. But she's from Austria. She had some really cool stuff. There's quite a few Dutch. There's some people from Austria. Sergey was there from Russia. It's mostly British, but you know, there's quite a few Spanish that come as either artists or collectors. I think Spain is probably due for the next, you know, I think maybe in a few years, maybe they'll, you know, either Barcelona or Madrid could host an event similar.
Were there any really glaring differences between a UK show and a United States type show?
You know, I mean, the size, I mean, it's a much more intimate setting. It's a smaller event. There's less stalls, but the quality is as good or possibly better, not to offend any of my American compatriot artists, because we have a lot of talent here as well. I'm trying to think if there was any other kind of like cultural differences. Like I said, because the UK and Europe are so starved for events like this, like people kind of wait up all year for this. So when they come, they're not just coming to socialize. It seems like people come there with specific things they want to buy. My impression of DesignerCon, outside of, you know, we've talked a little bit about Mutant Vinyl Hardcore and Paul Kaiju. There's the whole Kaiju crowd that, you know, swamped his booth at DesignerCon and what that's about. But I get the impression from DesignerCon is a lot of people in Southern California or even Northern California, like, they have loads of different events they can go to year round. They can buy stuff online. There's plenty of places where collectors can get stuff ahead of time. So like when I was at DesignerCon, I won't name any names, but there were hardcore collectors there who, you know, they had their hands in their pockets because they were there just to kind of get signatures and meet the artist. They had spent their money for the year already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was the big difference, at least from my perspective, is that the UK collectors or UK customers, like, you know, they're not just there to socialize. Obviously, they love meeting the artist and, you know, they want to have fun and there's a social aspect of it. But there's also, you know, this is a great opportunity to get exclusives or get customs that they might not be able to get, you know, otherwise. Because, for instance, if somebody does a release in the United States, maybe it's the middle of the night in the UK or Spain or Switzerland or wherever. So that they might not have the best of luck getting something, you know, if that's always hard. If Huck releases something, you know, on the West Coast, odds are that people in the UK are going to, you know, they're either going to have to stay up very late or they're going to have to hope it doesn't sell out by the, you know, UK morning time. Right. So he comes over to ToyCon and gives those customers, you know, first crack at it, which is nice. It's nice to sort of spread the opportunities, you know, to different regions of the world so that, you know, not just people on the West Coast and the States have the, you know, get first dibs at stuff.
Yeah, and I would say definitely, I mean, speaking to that too, like, I've noticed even, like, the Andrew Bell, when he does his Android releases, he'll have 3 to 4 releases throughout the day, considering that Asia and the UK are in a completely different time frame. So, you know, anyone wanting one of his Androids doesn't have to stay up until 4 a.m. trying to get the thing. So that'd be awesome if, you know, more, you know, stateside artists can consider, you know, the whole world and maybe reserve a few, maybe, you know, release 10 in the morning, release, you know, 10 at 4 p.m., you know, throughout the day so you can do more international sales.
That's a great idea, yeah.
Well, I mean, actually, speaking of selling out, so as we discussed earlier, so John Paul Kaiser didn't sell out his MacCready piece and he brought some back. Were there any more trends that you noticed that were selling better over there than typically you see here?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like in fashion, things can vary greatly from season to season, year to year. And this is just my perspective. Someone there might say, oh, no, he's got it totally wrong. But from my perspective, it seemed like they were less crazy about Dunnies this year. And there seemed to be, you know, like Asian themed stuff, anything sort of samurai shogun related, that seemed to do well. You know, anything, I think 3A, there were 3A figures or anything kind of robotic that did well. I hesitate to say this, but I feel like maybe like street art or graffiti inspired, urban inspired toys, maybe we're a little down this year. Maybe people were just a little bit like, just tired of it, seen it, been there, done that sort of thing. So,
now, when I think of ToyCon UK, I always think, you know, primarily it seems like just customs, like tons and tons of customs. When you're there, is it noticeable that it seems more like a custom event, or does it really feel like it is mass produced as well as customs?
No, it's mostly customs. Okay. I would say it's probably 80% customs or more. I mean, Minty Fresh, which is a store out of the Netherlands. They had a stall there and they had a good selection of productions. And then of course, Collect and Display run by Lee. It's a great website. He's basically the sole UK representative. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other small stores.
Well, is Hangang still?
Hangang's still there.
Yeah, I know they have.
They were there and Corey, yep. Those guys as well. They do more kind of targeted specific, product offering than, you know, Lee Collect and Display kind of, he covers a broader range than Corey or Hangang. There might have been one other store that I'm overlooking. I'm so sorry if, don't want to offend anyone. You know, like
you
I said,
can't
I
cover everybody. Right. So do you think it should be a 2-day event or no, if everything's being picked over?
No, I think it could be a 2-day event. I mean, I think obviously the artists that have their own stalls, which they would have to, you know, they'd have to plan ahead a little bit more to have more product, but I think they could sell, you know, take for instance like Two Petals Rose or Squank or House of Boz or Tomodachi Island, or I can't name everyone, but all those guys, if they brought more product, I'm sure they could sell more product over a 2-day event. I mean, in my mind, I think the perfect length for an event like that would be you have a preview night on Friday night just for 2 hours. And you sell VIP tickets to the hardcore collectors who, you know, they plan to come in and drop, you know, a few hundred pounds right away. I would get the hardcore collectors taken care of on Friday night. And then, everyone can have a little bit of breathing room Saturday and Sunday. And I think, you know, I also should mention Matt Jones, you know, Lunartic, who does the Loose Tea. He held a workshop, and my resident illustrator, Mr. Biscuit, he and his girlfriend, they actually were in the workshop, and they really enjoyed it. They came back, and Richard showed me his creation, and he's uber galvanized to do this now. So I think Matt doing those workshops, he does them in Berlin as well. I think that is a really good thing. And I think if you had, you know, if Matt did a workshop on Saturday and Sunday, that would be great. And maybe there's an opportunity for another artist to go into something specific, maybe airbrushing or, you know, working with Magic's, you know, two-part epoxy or something like that.
So outside of Matt, there was no other panels or discussions or any teaching sessions or anything like that?
Not this year. I think last year Jean-Paul Kaiser had some kind of discussion. I wasn't there. I remember seeing, you know, screenshots of it. But yeah, it was just, you know, Matt Jones' little workshop on how to get into customizing. And they seemed like that was a real hit. People liked that. And I think if you had like another event like that for Sunday, you had a 2-day show, if you had a preview night, I think it's a big step to go from a 1-day show to a whole weekend, but I think it could work.
I think the preview night is a good idea, but it's also tricky because what you're saying is it sounds like everything sold out really early Saturday. So it sounds like majority of the stuff is just going to sell out to the Friday crowd as well. It's kind of the same thing what happens at San Diego Comic-Con. Really, preview night is the huge night, and then after that, it kind of just tapers off. I would hate for them to do a Friday night preview night, and majority of the stuff sells on Friday night, and then come Saturday for the casual collector or just casual person, there's not that much for them to see.
Maybe they could hold stuff back, just like what you were saying about Andrew Bell doing timed releases. I mean, maybe somebody like Two Petals Rose, maybe he could say, okay, on Friday night, I'm gonna sell 20 of these, but I'm gonna have another 15 available for Saturday, and then have 10 available for Sunday. Like he could maybe split it up that way or something.
It would take a little planning. Yeah,
you
definitely could. But I know as far as artists, they're gearing themselves up the whole year for that, so it's hard to not take sales if someone's waiting there to take a sale. So
yeah, you can shoot yourself in the foot if Sunday's a slow day, and then you end up going home with 7 instead of potentially selling out day one.
Yeah, so I see what you're saying with that. I mean, a lot of people do that for something that's uber popular, where they know they have to give away lottery tickets and everything just to kind of space things out. But when it's primarily something that's custom based or one offs or small runs of 5, it would be tricky. It would be really hard for these artists to not take orders and, holding stock for the next day. Mm-hmm. But it definitely sounds like it's a great event. I would like to see more, people making it a destination, jumping over the pond and getting over there. Like, I would love to go there. And how did, Brotherford, you said Brian Brotherford was there this year?
Yeah, Ryan, a.k.a. Brotherford Industries, he was there. He actually had already planned a European vacation, and so he rearranged his itinerary a little bit so he could come. Okay. And his sales were pretty good. Like he sold quite a bit of his pieces. He sold a lot of the larger resins this time versus the smaller stuff that he sold in the past. I think it takes some planning, but I think North American artists could try to go. Maybe they could go in with another artist over there. Like I had a couple of UK artists who didn't have booths asked me, they say, hey, do you think I should do my own stall next year? And I was like, yeah, you totally should. And I said, if you're, scared to dip your toe in, maybe you could find, a counterpart North American artist to share a booth with. And then that way, one of you does the heavy duty work on Saturday and the other one on Sunday or something like mm-hmm. that. Like, I know these things are, it's tricky and it takes planning. And then also I know some of the artists, they've already worked out the numbers ahead of time as far as what they need to sell to pay for the booth and pay for their hotel, and adding a second night hotel, it complicates things. I get that. But, I would really like to see ToyCon take the next step. And I've already had a call into, Bob Africa at Kid Robot and said, hey, you guys need to take a look at maybe going next year. And,
Were any companies there, or was it all independents?
no producers. I mean, I understand Course came last year. Course had a stall last year. You know, like I said, the retailers were there. Minty Fresh out of Netherlands and Cory Cory, Hang Gang, and Collect and Display. But, yeah, there were no – well, I say no. Once again, I didn't get out of the booth until the afternoon, so I might have – you know, I might be overlooking some other producer that was actually had, you know, production pieces there.
I mean, like at DesignerCon, like a company like Smooth On will come and have a booth. Was there any kind of booth?
That's an area for growth, is to have somebody like Smooth On or have a screen printer. Like, you know, at Decon, they always have a, what are they called? Two something. I always forget their name. It's a t-shirt company, and they set up the screen printing facility right there at DesignerCon. I think, you know, that's a real opportunity for growth if they wanted to have something like that, having some screen printers, having, you know, different things like that, Smooth On, or, you know, any sort of suppliers, you know, promotional companies like could have a booth there. I've always thought, one thing that I've always thought was missing from all these trade shows is like somebody like Mailboxes, etc. Like, if they set up a booth and just said, "Hey, we'll you can leave your stuff at our, you know, you collect hardcore collectors, you can leave your bags at the booth and pick them at the end of the day, and for a small fee, we'll pack them and make sure they don't break." And
ship them home straight from the show.
Exactly. I mean, I've always thought that would be a
Even if someone had just to use their space just to fill it up with lockers, and people can pay to store their stuff, even just so they don't have to walk around with that super expensive custom, or you see it all the time, especially at San Diego, people going down to the garage to put their stuff in the cars, and then you hear about break-ins, and so,
Yeah, lockers would be, that's a simpler solution than a packing station, but yeah, anything like that would, because then, you know, you're carrying around, like I remember one piece that we sold was by Spanish artist FurMG. And he does these rocket dunnies. It's like a dunny, and it's attached to like rocket boosters, and it's a cool custom, but it's super fragile. So the guy who bought one of those, like, you know, I packed it really carefully, and I was like, you know, I was like, yeah, okay, here it is, but just be very careful walking around with it, you know. And I felt bad for him walking away, because I thought, you know, he's not really going to be completely relaxed the rest of the day now, you know, because he's carrying around this hyper fragile piece that. Mm-hmm. You know, he wants to get home intact. So yeah, so a locker would be a great solution.
Yeah, and especially for, there's always after parties going on after these things. So it'd be nice to have I guess most people probably go back to their hotels and everything after that. But speaking of after parties, what was the atmosphere like after the convention?
And yeah, there was an after party at a pub. I can't recall the name of it. It was maybe 5-7 blocks away. And Gary from the Toy Chronicle, he organized the whole thing. I guess Andy helped as well. They had some free drinks and just, you know, typical London pub. And, you know, everyone was there. They had reserved the top floor of this pub. And awesome. No bar fights or anything like that to report.
Oh, see, I was hoping for some good stories.
No.
I was hoping for a couple hooligans.
Surely there's someone got too drunk and...
Yeah. Well, I didn't close the pub down. Maybe somebody did. maybe the story just didn't get back.
All right, it's time to call Huck.
yeah, he was probably there till the end. Yeah.
So here's the big question: are you going to do another contest next year for sending it to someone out there?
You know, I'll be frank. I don't think the numbers worked this year, that there wasn't enough participation. You know, RX7 was great. You know, he is such a talent. He's such a nice person. I really enjoyed having him in the booth, and he seemed to be the belle of the ball. Like, everyone really loved having him there, and it was a really positive thing. But from just a pure financial standpoint, probably, I mean, maybe there's a different type of contest if you guys have an idea. You know, I've already recommended to several artists that they could run a raffle, like if you painted like an 18-inch Mega Money and sold $10 tickets for it, and then, you know, if you didn't win, you at least give them some kind of small resin piece, you know, monotone painted, just as a, you know, thank you for participating in the raffle. I think you could make something like that work from an individual artist standpoint.
I think the contest should be that you will take all artists that you know that are have the same name as Lunch Meats. they get to go to London next year.
That sounds great.
Let's take
the show on the road.
Yeah, I wish wish one of us would win the lottery, and then we could just take the show on the road and invite our 25 closest friends in the industry to join us.
I would do if I won the lottery. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I have a family over there, and I lived there for 9 years. So I'm going to really try to go back next year, and, maybe I'll come up with some other contest idea that might work better that more people get excited about. So we'll see.
Okay. Let me ask you this. So the West Coast has DesignerCon, UK has ToyCon UK, and all, why not make something similar to this on the East Coast? Are you up for the challenge?
I don't know if I'm want to be the one who quarterbacks that, but I would, if somebody else wants to take the lead on that, I would definitely give them a lot of my energy and passion, and I would help as much as I can. There has been talk over the years of a DCon East. I'm going, Martian Toys is going to have a booth at AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C., June 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And, it's more of a traditional Comic-Con, but mm-hmm. I thought, what the hell, maybe if I go down there, I can prime the pump and get, draw some other interest on the East Coast. If not,
because New York Comic-Con has just gotten huge. I mean, there's obviously audiences for this sort of thing.
Yeah, New York Comic-Con is massive. And, the block is like a little mini DCon in itself. So there are enough artists and companies out here that it could happen. I don't know if it necessarily has to happen in New York City. Maybe Boston, maybe Philadelphia, maybe again in D.C., or I don't know, maybe even Pittsburgh or someplace like that. But it would be interesting to have another a DCon East.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like the East Coast would definitely benefit for something like this. It's a shame that so many East Coast people, have to pay the expenses of going to a San Diego and DesignerCon. I mean, it's just not fair. So it'd be nice if every once in a while there was another convention on the East Coast where the Westerners have to go out to. Again, DesignerCon probably doesn't want that. They want everyone going to their convention, but that would be a reason to definitely go East.
One thing that I've always, it's in the back of my head of a million things I want to do is I want to make a map of North America and put a pin where, notable artists are and see if there's any trend. One thing I was told when I was at ToyCon is that there's an area in, I forget what it's called now, but there's a certain area in the UK where there seems to be this high concentration of toy designers. And no one's really sure how that happened, but, it's home to, a lot of the toy designers like Rich Page and John Paul Kaiser and Map, to name a few, but there were other ones mentioned to me as well. I'd love to do like a North American map and put pins of, notable toy designers and customizers and see if there's any, see if there's some other trend that we're overlooking.
Well, I tell you what, I hear Montana is a real hot spot for designer toys.
Really?
No. I don't think I've ever received an order from Montana. It's, I'm not even sure that qualifies as a state anymore. You just never hear about them.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. There's also, like, where the artists are and where the customers are maybe two very different places. Like, there may be a lot of customers in Southern California, but maybe there's more artists in Northern California, for instance. I would think that's a true statement, but I'm not sure. I mean, like I said, it's something I've always thought, if I have a free Saturday, maybe I'll sit down and start to, take out a map and start putting pins in it, but I've just never done that yet.
So let me propose this to you. So you got, and on the same street, you got Con UK on one side, DesignerCon on the other. Which one are you going to first?
Oh, man, you're putting me in an awkward position. I guess I go to ToyCon. What do you guys think?
I've never been to ToyCon, so I can't say anything on the. You've been, so
yeah. I think the difference is to me that there's great artists on the West Coast, all over the U.S. and Canada and Mexico, and there's great artists in Europe. Mostly, I notice in Europe, most of the European artists are either in the U.K., Spain, or Netherlands. Those seem to be the three hotbeds. There's great artists on both. I think for me, the difference is like, I don't feel the customers at DesignerCon, it's not an essential event for them. Like, there's a social aspect of them going and getting sketches and getting autographs and stuff, but they don't have the same need to go to DesignerCon to purchase X, Y, and Z as the people in the UK or Spain do to go to ToyCon to get purchase X, Y, and Z. So from a retailer standpoint, I would have to give the nod to ToyCon. I hope that doesn't mean Martian Toys isn't going to get a booth at DesignerCon.
Well, you've been blacklisted right now.
Probably.
You know, speaking of DesignerCon, with it selling out so fast, I'm actually surprised they didn't offer up booths to previous exhibitors first. I mean, a lot of the other conventions do that. We do that at San Diego. The day that San Diego Comic-Con ends, that Sunday, we order our booth for the next year, and you get a hefty discount because you do that. I'm hoping that DesignerCon will offer that to their exhibitors next year. With how many people
for 2017, right?
Yeah, I'm hearing too many people didn't get a booth this year. You were there last year.
I think
you didn't get a booth. I heard horrible adorables. They didn't get a booth. So hopefully, the people that exhibited there this year.
A lot of people. Yeah, there was a lot. Gorilla didn't get a booth. A lot of pretty high profile booths last year. They didn't. For whatever reason,
and that's what I mean. They should.
I tried to see if there was a trend. Like I asked Aileen. I was like, "Hey, did Funko just come in and buy an aisle out?" And she's like, "No, not at all." And so I don't know if there were a lot of artists for this last year for 2015 that didn't get a booth. And so this time around, they made sure they got a booth. And if that's the case, if it's a case of every other year, then they need to seriously consider either changing venues or opening a third hallway.
I think the quick sellout even kind of caught them by surprise. I mean, it is still a pretty young convention. And I mean, up until this year, getting a booth up until, just a couple months before the actual show wasn't an issue. I would wager that they themselves were actually kind of taken back by how quickly it sold out this year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've had huge word of mouth for the past, I'm going to say probably 4 years have been going really strong on the word of mouth. So there's no doubt that has a huge part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know it's a problem until it's a problem.
Well, it sounds like you had a great time over there, Tyler. It sounds like...
Dude, you sound like my mom. My little brother's named Trevor.
Dude.
My mom hasn't called me Tyler since 1986.
I don't know why it's a problem. It's crazy.
Yeah, Gary, you better not have too many kids. You'll never get their names straight.
Oh, my God. It's
yeah, insane. Or just not name them similar.
And I'm so aware of it, too. Like, I know not to screw it up, and I still can't get it right. I'm just going to, mess your names together. Like, you're going to be Taryn from now on.
Taryn, yeah.
Taryn, perfect.
Well, Aaron, it sounds like you definitely had a great time, a great experience. I mean, you definitely helped enlighten everybody on what's going on over the ToyCon. So hopefully in the coming years, I think you've definitely encouraged more artists to make the trek over there, exhibit. And
yeah, definitely. Like I said, anyone who wants some advice on numbers or anything can contact me, email me, sales@martiantoys or info@martiantoys.com. I'll share some kind of inside stuff as far as numbers, and you can kind of figure out whether you can make it work or not. Maybe team up with a UK artist over there to split a stall. I'm going to try and do my part to evangelize and get some of the toy, manufacturers, Kid Robot, Course, or whoever else to maybe have some sort of presence there next year. And I really would like to try to go again, and maybe I will think of another contest. One final thing, I want to thank the artists that helped me in the stall. I could not have done it without their help, especially Zuccotti, Paolo. He was amazing. He was a jack of all trades. He found everything from hooks to hang the banner to, doing little touch-up paint to, just everything. He was super helpful. And then, shout out to Ryan, a.k.a. Brutherford Industries, Javier Jimenez, Christina Ravina, and our Dunny Contest winner, RX7. Thanks, guys.
It was like your acceptance speech at the Oscars.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all right. So we have a surprise game today. Tyler, you said you were going to work something up that was going to be ToyCon UK themed?
Yeah, and so in the spirit of the theme of tonight's episode, I've always been kind of fascinated with sort of British slang, and I kind of got a firsthand taste of that.
So you guys
are familiar with I don't know if this is a regional thing, but like, you know, you've had a bad day or you're being kind of lazy. You're kind of go like, oh, I'm just bumming. Like, how are you doing today? Oh, I'm kind of bumming. Or, you know, hey, I've had my sweats on since, and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, I'm still in my pajamas, you know, I'm just bumming around today. Mm-hmm. And so I used to say that, and my creative director was, British. And every time I would say bumming, he would just laugh. And, I don't want to get into exactly what bumming means, but I mean, considering, what the English term bum is, it's not too hard to put it together. And so I've always kind of thought those terms are funny. And so I compiled a list of English slang, and I'm going to say the term. And then I want the two of you, without using Google, to say what you think it might mean. And I know Aaron mentioned that he lived over UK for a couple of years, so he might have a slight advantage, but we'll see. Some of these seem pretty obscure.
A shame, but okay.
Aaron, do you understand the bumming reference?
Yeah, I do.
You can imagine.
It's not heavily used terminology over there, but I know what it's implying, yeah.
But you could see why it brought on giggles every time.
Yeah,
I would say
definitely.
First thing in the morning.
Well, you know, like a few years ago, you don't see them as much now, but you know, like when people used to have the fanny packs? Well, a fanny pack in the UK is something entirely different.
Well, even isn't...
I'll bet it is.
I used to work in an animation studio where 80-90% of the studio was from Ireland. A studio closed down in Ireland, and they came over here. And they used to crack me up with a lot of things they said. Like, one of the things they called... erasers rubbers, and I just thought that was hilarious.
I used to laugh at that too. All right, you guys, you ready? I'm gonna keep score this round.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna kick your butt.
So there will be a winner and there will be a loser.
Oh, no,
all right, guys, your first term is collie wobbles. Gary, would you like to take a guess?
Collie wobbles, it sounds like when someone's eaten too much cauliflower and they lose their balance.
And Aaron, do you have an answer?
I don't know. I've never heard that one. I would have to say probably collie wobbles is like, you know, confusing information. That'll be my guess.
All right. Actually, the definition of collie wobbles is extreme queasiness or stomach pain brought on by stress, nervousness, or anxiety.
God, I was so close.
You were close. But so far, you guys are tied at zero. The next one is a phrase called Her Majesty's Pleasure. Aaron, do you want to go first this time?
Her Majesty's Pleasure. I think that has to do with relieving yourself. Like,
using the bath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the throne, yeah. I think.
And Gary, would you like to take a guess?
I think Aaron probably has it, but I'm going to say it sounds like drug use. It's time to go shoot up. I don't know.
Sorry, guys. The definition is being incarcerated or put in prison.
Whoa.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't... I would never have guessed that.
This one's a weird one.
Tower of London term that probably... everyday people don't use very often. I don't know.
Yeah. One of you guys will probably get this, legless. Gary, do you want to take a guess?
Legless? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Legless. Man. I mean, it sounds exactly what I want to say. I'm going to say legless is being immobile.
Aaron, would you want to take a run at legless?
Legless is being highly intoxicated.
Aaron gets a, he's on the board.
Dude, that's advantage. He knew that right off the bat.
Well, I better damn well know one of them, right?
I need a lifeline. I'm going to call Squink.
Call Huck.
I'm going to call him. It's what only, what's 9 p.m. here? It's what, 6 in the morning there?
It's, what is it, 5:30 in the morning in the UK right now?
Let's give Chris a call.
Yeah, I'm sure he's up.
Yep. All right, the next one, and this one's kind of weird. So this one is actually a Cockney term, porkies.
I'm going to say sausage.
Aaron, do you want to take a stab at porkies?
I'm not really sure. I think it's like a some sort of breakfast sandwich or something.
No, it's a Cockney rhyming term that means lies. So someone would be telling porkies.
I'm terrible at this game.
Is it a Cockney rhyming scheme? Because I know
it's one of the Cockney rhymings. Okay, yeah.
So you take like two words together, and like for instance, a couple of beers, they would say Britney Spears.
This comes from pork pies, which rhymes with telling lies.
Telling lies.
And
okay.
So they shorten that to porkies.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay, guys, next one I have is snookered. And Aaron, do you want to take first stab at this?
Snookered. I would say the same as what I said for legless. I'd say it's very drunk, intoxicated.
Gary, what do you think?
I'm going to say it has nothing to do with Snooki's New Jersey show. Snookered. Tired.
The definition is to be in a bad situation. Such as, or otherwise without a paddle.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to finish up this game with the term.
This game is snookered right now.
This game is snookered. But Aaron is in the lead.
Yeah, with one.
So, yeah, but Aaron, you can win it here, or Gary, you could tie it up with tickety boo.
I hope you have a lightning round, buddy.
Tickety boo.
I like it.
I like the phrase. I don't know. I don't think I've ever used it.
What is going to be the name of my next toy?
The Tickety Boo?
Yep.
Oh, your Halloween release.
Yep. It's done. I'm taking it.
Aaron?
Well, depending on what it means, I guess.
Tickety Boo. I have no idea. I guess I should guess something. I'll say it means tricked, fooled.
It's a phrase for when everything's going great. Example, all is tickety-boo in my world.
Woohoo!
So, Aaron, with a score of 1, you are the winner.
Wow, yay! What an impressive
Congratulations, that's a high honor.
Yeah, and to be fair, I'm not sure exactly how many of these are commonly used in 2016.
That makes it even better, though. The fact England. That, you know, Aaron lived there for how many years and he wasn't familiar with these. It evened the playing field a little bit. Okay, well, that's the show. Hey, guys, why don't you guys mention where everyone can find you? Aaron, why don't you go first?
Yeah, you can go to martiantoys.com. You can contact me directly at sales@martiantoys.com or info at either one's fine. And we even have a toll-free number. It's 866-867-5329.
All right, Tyler.
And you can reach me on Instagram at hamfx or through my website, tylerham.com.
Okay. And I'm Gary Ham. You can find me at superham.com or on Instagram at Gary Ham. And that's the show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, the Marsham Toy Hour comes out every week. Tell your friends. Bye.